We're going to focus again a bit tonight, not the whole program, certainly, but a bit on what has been happening in Egypt, Northern Africa, and spreading now to various states in the Middle East. Events that are operating way ahead of, almost ahead of real time, to watch American media scrambling to try to catch up and keep abreast of events is almost pathetic. Since very few of the American reporters have any knowledge whatsoever of that area, Christiane Amanpour being certainly the exception. But once again today, I've heard from so many people who have gone to English.AlJazeera.net to get coverage from the situation in Egypt, and reports from other Arab states. For example, the firing today, I guess, or the demand for resignation, was it today, of the entire cabinet, the Jordanian cabinet, by King Abdullah, in a feeble attempt to try to forestall what is going to break out in that country. But we're going to talk a little bit about it tonight. I got an email here from Danny. He says, Mike, I just heard a reporter on MSNBC, this is about an hour ago, say that the Egyptian people want President Obama to not just make a vague statement about what's going on, but a direct statement in support of the people. They want Obama to show real support in favor of the masses. Ha, ha, ha. Welcome to the club. He won't even do that for the masses in his own country. Danny. Well, you got that right, Danny. But in his defense, probably, he's not allowed to. He's just not allowed to. That's not how it's played. Oh, my God. The thing that is apparently lost on most of us in this country is that every bomb that explodes, every tear gas canister, I should say, that explodes against these demonstrators, these people demanding freedom, every jet that flies overhead, every tank that rumbles into the square with the threat of instant death, these are all made in America. And every Egyptian knows this. Every Egyptian understands that the United States has been rewarding Mubarak to the tune of a billion or two every single year in order to keep him in power, 80% of which goes to the military. The people of Egypt understand this, just like the people of Palestine understand their predicament. The people of Kuwait understand theirs. The people of Jordan, the people of Syria, on and on and on. As Chris Hedges points out, and I think a lot of people, this is a clearly obvious statement, I think we made it the other night, there has never been breathing space. Let's start with that kind of a metaphor. Breathing space for Arab-speaking people, for Muslim people to resist these regimes that were put in power, these dictatorial regimes that were put in power and backed by the West, mostly by the United States and the United Kingdom. And the only alternative to these repressive regimes, since no political organizations were allowed to exist, except maybe just pro forma, like the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, the only outlet for this frustration, this rage, this anger, has been Islam. The mosques. And as a result of that, as a result of the pressure by the United States and Israel and the United Kingdom against the people of the Middle East, the Arab speakers in the Middle East, the Muslim people, we have created so much of what is so much of what we see as an enemy force against the United States. Now, we created this. And it's maddening for someone who understands that to watch these developments, to see what's going on. And those of us who have been watching it since, the First Intifada is a good starting place back in the mid-80s. When the Palestinians rose up against the Israeli occupiers with rocks and stones against tanks and Uzis and so-called rubber bullets, for those of us who have been watching this and seeing how the radicalization of the people who have been oppressed and suppressed by the UK, the US, and Israel, and how simple it would have been, yes, simple it would have been, to have allowed people the idea of democracy, small d democracy, to have allowed people the sense of not feeling that they were occupied, to allow people the sense that they that when they had an election, it was an honest election, like what happened in Gaza. What happened in Gaza? George Bush and his puppet handler, Cheney, pushed and pushed and pushed for free elections in Gaza. Well, who knows what their motive was? But Hamas won, overwhelmingly. Oops, sorry, that's not the kind of democracy we're going to allow you to have, you see. So the only avenue that has been left to millions of people who have been under the boot of these absolute iron-fisted dictators backed by the U.S., the U.K., and in some instances Israel, mostly the U.S. and U.K., the only outlet has been Islam. And the more extreme forms of Islam, the more attractive it was to the younger people. And what did George Bush say when he was asked, why do they hate us? Because we build houses or we own houses. I mean, this is maddening. And this has been going on for 30 years. Well, longer than that. But it's just very frustrating to have been talking, been one of the people, like we have on this program, talking about this for the past two decades. It can't go on. Eventually, it is going to erupt. If people would understand why the people in that part of the world are driven to what we would consider to be extreme religion, Islamist policies and theories, it is so obvious. It is so obvious. And to watch it happen. And yet, Huckabee, this crazy son of a bitch from Arkansas who thinks he's going to be president, he said today that if Palestinians want an independent state, they should get it from the Arabs, not from Israel. Now, here's a Christian evangelical minister who has about whose sense of the Middle East comes directly out of the Bible, for God's sake. He said Jews should be allowed to settle anywhere throughout the biblical land of Israel, an area that includes the West Bank and East Jerusalem. And he called the demand on Israel to give up land for peace, quote, an unrealistic, unworkable, and unreachable goal. Huckabee said that if a Palestinian state were to be established, it shouldn't come at Israel's expense. What kind of ass backward language is that? The establishment of the Israeli state came at Palestinian expense. I mean, this is insane. And yet in this country, Huckabee, you see, there he is. He thinks he's going to be president. Yes, he is. He's way up on the list, right behind Mitt Romney, isn't he, huh? He said, quote, there are vast amounts of territory that are in the hands of Muslims, in the hands of Arabs. Maybe the international community can come together and accommodate, end quote. Push them further out of their own, what they consider to be their own homeland, right? Just keep pushing them. He said that as president, he would move the U.S. Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, affirming Israel's position that that city should be its undivided and eternal capital. And Huckabee said he would not pressure Israel into making any territorial concessions. It's people like Huckabee. Huckabee's ulterior motive, of course, is utter and absolute destruction. You know, a Christian fundamentalist, he will not be happy until he sees every Jew dead or converted to Christianity. That is an essential part of his dogma. Every Jew dead or converted to Christianity. And I don't mean the kind of conversions that occurred during Spanish Inquisition when the Jews of Spain, okay, I'm a Catholic. No. Huckabee wants them all in the bosom of Christ or dead. And yet, the Israeli Jews, allow this kind of vermin to come to their country, what they consider to be their country. And this kind of vermin talks about the Palestinian people as if they were bugs, roaches, spiders.
Defining anger management, it's Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. As Chris Hedges writes at Truth Dig, the uprising in Egypt, although united around the nearly universal desire to rid the country of the military dictator Hosni Mubarak, it also presages the inevitable shift within the Arab world away from secular regimes toward an embrace of Islamic rule. Hedges says, don't be fooled by the glib sloganeering about democracy or the facile reporting by Western reporters, few of whom speak Arabic or have experience in the region. Egyptians are not Americans. They have their own culture, their own set of grievances, and their own history, and it's not ours. They want, as we do, to have a say in their own governance. But that say will include widespread support, especially among Egypt's poor, who make up more than half the country and live on about $2 a day. Widespread support for the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamic parties. Any real opening of the political system in the Arab world's most populated nation will see an empowering of these Islamic movements. And any attempt to close the system further, say a replacement of Mubarak with another military dictator, will ensure a deeper radicalization in Egypt and the wider Arab world. The only way opposition, Hedges says, the only way opposition to the U.S.-backed regime of Mubarak could be expected for the past three decades was through, or could be expressed, the only way opposition to Mubarak could be expressed for the past three decades was through Islamic movements, from the Muslim Brotherhood to more radical Islamic groups, some of which embrace violence. And any replacement of Mubarak, which now seems almost certain, while it may initially be dominated by moderate secular leaders, will, once elections are held and popular will is expressed, have an Islamic coloring. A new government, to maintain credibility with the Egyptian population, will have to more actively defy demands from Washington and be more openly antagonistic to Israel. What is happening in Egypt, like what happened in Tunisia, tightens the noose that will, unless Israel and Washington radically change their policies toward the Palestinians and the Muslim world, tightens the noose that will threaten to strangle the Jewish state as well as dramatically curtail American influence in the Middle East. I digress for a moment. This of course, has been one of the major fears around our support, unqualified support, for Israel for the past half century. And that is, if the Arab nations that surround Israel were ever to decide, I mean truly decide, not like in 1967, not like in 1972, but truly decide that they'd had enough of not just their leadership, but of what they see as a cancer right in the middle of what they consider to be their part of the world, and would rise up as one against the state of Israel. The only way Israel could respond, and this is why Israel developed a nuclear arsenal, would be with nuclear weapons. And the U.S. strategic planners know this. And that's one of the reasons, you know, we can say what we like about supporting dictatorships and kingdoms, even though they are antithetical to democracy and freedom in the most blatant manner. But the fear, the nuclear fear, this is why Israel has, what, 200, 400, 600, not tactical, but strategic nuclear weapons. And this is one of the reasons, I've been told, that the strategic planners in the United States have been so fearful of the development of what they referred to as the Muslim atomic bomb, which Pakistan has had several of for a number of years. And while Pakistan is certainly inclined to prepare itself for all-out war with India, there is also open channel between the ISS, Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Muslim Brotherhood. The policies of the United States and the United Kingdom and Israel over the past 50 years have been so blatantly and brutally one-sided. That to show surprise at the rise of Islamic resistance is to say that one is stupid, just completely ignorant. How many times have you ever been in a discussion where the rights of the Palestinian people were discussed with any attitude more than condescension or just a passing, oh, yeah, the Palestinians, yeah, well, if they behave themselves, they'll get a state maybe someday. Who knows? I don't know. What about how many people know in this country know about the situation in Gaza? How many people know that for the past 50 years, Palestinians have been living in refugee camps? How many people know that? How many people have ever heard of Sabra and Shatila? I mean people in this country. This is called the chickens coming home to roost.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Hedges goes on to say today, write to the failure of the United States to halt the slow-motion ethnic cleansing of Palestinians by Israel has consequences. The failure to acknowledge the collective humiliation and anger felt by most Arabs because of the presence of U.S. troops on Muslim soil, not only in Iraq and Afghanistan, but in the staging bases set up in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, has consequences. The failure to denounce the repression, including the widespread use of torture, censorship, and rigged elections wielded by our allies against their citizens in the Middle East, has consequences. We are soaked with the stench of these regimes. Mubarak, who reportedly is suffering from cancer, is seen as our puppet, a man who betrayed his own people and the Palestinians for money and power. The Muslim world does not see us as we see ourselves. Muslims are aware, while we are not, that we have murdered tens of thousands of Muslims in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. We have terrorized families, villages, and nations. We enable and defend the Israeli war crimes carried out against Palestinians and the Lebanese. Indeed, we give the Israelis the weapons and military aid to carry out the slaughter. We dismiss the thousands of dead as collateral damage, and when those who are fighting against occupation kill us or Israelis, we condemn them, regardless of context, as terrorists. Our hypocrisy is recognized on the Arab street. Most Arabs see bloody and disturbing images every day from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, images that are censored on our television screens. They have grown sick of us. They have grown sick of the Arab regimes that pay lip service to the suffering of Palestinians but do nothing to intervene. They've grown sick of being ruled by tyrants who are funded and supported by Washington. Arabs understand that we, like the Israelis, primarily speak to the Muslim world in the crude language of power and violence. And because of our entrancement with our own power and ability to project forces, we are woefully out of touch. Israeli and American intelligence services did not foresee the popular uprising in Tunisia or Egypt. General Aviv Kochavi, Israel's new intelligence chief, told Knesset members last Tuesday that, quote, there is no concern at the moment about the stability of the Egyptian government, end quote. Tuesday, it turned out, was the day hundreds of thousands of Egyptians poured into the streets to begin their nationwide protests. What is happening in Egypt will damage and perhaps unravel the fragile peace treaty between Egypt and Jordan with Israel. It is likely to end Washington's alliance with these Arab intelligence services, including the use of prisons to torture those we have disappeared into our vast network of black sites. The economic ties between Israel and these Arab countries will suffer. The current antagonism between Cairo and the Hamas government in Gaza will be replaced by more overt cooperation. The Egyptian government's collaboration with Israel, which includes demolishing tunnels into Gaza, the sharing of intelligence, and the passage of Israeli warships and submarines through the Suez Canal, will be in serious jeopardy. Any government, even a transition government that is headed by a pro-Western secularist such as Mohammed al-Baradei, will have to make these changes in the relationship with Israel and Washington if it wants to have any credibility and support. We are seeing the rise of a new Middle East, one that will not be as pliable to Washington or as cowed by Israel. The secular Arab regimes backed by the United States are discredited and moribund. The lofty promise of a pan-Arab union championed by the Egyptian leader Gamal Abdel Nasser and the original Ba'athist has become a farce. Nasser's defiance of Washington and the Western powers has been replaced by client states. And secular Arab regimes from Morocco to Yemen, for all their ties with the West, have not provided freedom or dignity or opportunity or prosperity for their people. They have failed as spectacularly as the secular Palestinian resistance movement led by Yasser Arafat. And Arabs, frustrated and enduring mounting poverty, are ready for something new. Radical Islamist groups such as the Palestinian Hamas, the Shiite Hezbollah in Lebanon, and the jihadists fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan are the new heroes, especially for the young, who make up most of the Arab world. And many of those who admire these radicals are not observant Muslims. They support the Islamists because they fight back. Communism as an ideological force never took root in the Muslim world because it clashed with the tenets of Islam. The championing of the free market in countries such as Egypt has done nothing to ameliorate crushing poverty. Its only visible result has been to enrich the elite, including Mubarak's son and designated heir Gamal. Islamic revolutionary movements, because of these failures, are very attractive. And this is why Mubarak forbids the use of the slogan, Islam is the solution, and bans the Muslim Brotherhood. These secular Arab regimes hate and fear Hamas and the Islamic radicals as deeply as the Israelis do, and this hatred only adds to their luster. The rise of powerful Islamic parties appears inevitable. It appears inevitable not because of the Quran or a backward tradition, but because we and Israel believed we could bend the aspirations of the Arab world to our will through corruption and force. Chris Hedges, writing at Truthdig. Hedges speaks Arabic. He spent 7 years in the Middle East. He was a Middle East bureau chief of the New York Times. He's a senior fellow at the Nation Institute and a regular columnist for Truthdig. Chris Hedges is very credentialed where it concerns understanding not just the conflicts in the Middle East, but what gave rise to these conflicts and how they have been nurtured by the West. And the suppression that the United States has backed. I mean, Hedges understands this. You and I are not as credentialed. We don't speak Arabic, do we? We were not in the Middle East for 7 years. We were not the Middle East bureau chief of the New York Times. But you and I have watched this. We have watched this for years now. We know about Jordan. We know about Kuwait. We know about Saudi Arabia. We know what happened in Algeria in the 90s. We know about Mubarak, right? Don't we? Of course we do. Okay, we didn't know very much about Tunisia. So here we are, and now American network television, just about everybody, immediately they have to get Brian Williams over there, put him in that cool-looking jacket, turn up the collar there. You know, like, there you go. Now you look foreign correspondent-ish. Foreign correspondent-ish. All these network people running around with their hair on fire. I watch Anderson Cooper and somebody else. Who is it? Somebody from ABC, I guess, wandering into a crowd of demonstrators who are there because they've had enough of American-backed dictatorship in their country. And here comes Anderson Cooper with a film man and probably a sound man from CNN pushing into the crowd and trying to understand as if Anderson Cooper could understand, and what are they doing? Well, they're not really trying to understand. They're just trying to get some video. Give me some video. Can some of you people beat each other up? Can we please get some water cannons over here? How about a concussion grenade? For Christ's sake, where are the bullets? Where's the blood? We want to see blood. We always see blood when we cover the Palestinians. We want to see some blood here in Egypt. Where is it? Well, Anderson, stick around because I think you're going to get your wish on Friday. I think when Friday services are over in the mosques in Cairo and Alexandria, you're going to get your wish. You and the rest of these blood-sucking bastards that represent American media. I think you're going to get your wish, Anderson. I think you're going to get your footage then, your video shots then. I really do. Mubarak's statement today, the arrogance of this son of a bitch, that's what he was told to do. The guy that we sent over there, remember we talked about it last night? Sent over by Obama, and he was sent there because Obama was told to send him. And what did the guy say? The guy said, hey, listen, what's his name? Frank Wisner told Mubarak not to run for re-election. That's it. Get out there and say that. I won't run for re-election in September. And Mubarak said it. Obama told Wisner. Wisner told Mubarak. Who told Obama? And what did the Egyptian people say? How do you say F-U in Arabic? If you listen, you'll hear it.
border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
10 before the hour. Next hour, we are going to drift away from this topic. It certainly means more, I think. There is more afoot here than just, and I'm not trying to minimize 85 million people saying they've had enough. There is more afoot here than just the overthrow of a dictator, a 30-year-long reign of terror by one dictator backed by the United States. How often, my God, how often have we done this? How often? Chiang Kai-shek in Taiwan, the Shah of Iran, and the Shah's son was on... what's this, Piers Morgan show last night? I'm just astonished to see this. Francisco Franco of Spain, Salazar of Portugal, Mobutu Sese Seko of Zaire or the Congo, Marcos of the Philippines, Pinochet in Chile. How many times have we done this? And it's not that we can't learn a lesson. It's that you and I don't make these decisions. This is what gangster capitalism decides. Remember the Marcos regime? And then people power. And the overthrow of that regime and the election of, damn, I forget her name. How many times have we done this? And now this pig, John Bolton, the guy that Bush appointed to, did a recess appointment to get him to be ambassador to the UN from the United States because he is such a warmongering, corpse-loving son of a bitch, he never would have been confirmed. He is now saying that if Mubarak falls in Egypt, Israel should immediately bomb Iran. This little twit on Fox, the Murdoch terrorist organization, Sean Hannity, who couldn't find his ass with both hands if somebody held a mirror back there for him, he said to Bolton, "Do you think that the Israelis are going to have to strike? They're going to have to take action?" And Bolton, taking the bait, says, "Yeah, I think that's right. I don't think there's much time to act. And I think the fall of an Egyptian government committed to the peace agreement will almost certainly speed that timetable up. Bomb them. Kill them." Bolton says, "Al-Baradei ran cover for the Iranians for all those years that he was with the IAEA, and I just don't think the Israelis have much longer to wait. They're going to have to act in fairly short order. If Mubarak goes down, the Israelis, according to Bolton, should unleash their nuclear fury." And that's what it would be. It may not, the first bombs sent into Iran may not be nuclear, but I will goddamn guarantee you that the next wave would be, because at that moment, the world as you and I know it, my friend, ends. It's over. When Iran is attacked by Israel, that's when every mouth-breathing rapture freak in this country and around the world raises their hands to heaven and says, "Thank you, Jesus. Oh, come and get me now. Let me get rid of my clothes. Let me float up into your bosom." Because they'll be convinced that what they will be witnessing will be hell on earth, and it will be. And you know it as well as I do. Mubarak's human rights record... Every Egyptian knows, like I mentioned, that those expired tear gas cans and the army tanks and the water hoses and the bullets, they're all made in America. They know that. The Egyptians know it. But Mubarak is almost is the most well-known among human rights advocates as a serious offender of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the Convention Against Torture. His own constitution forbids torture. The Egyptian Organization of Human Rights reports that between 1993 and December 2008, 460 torture cases were reported, with 167 cases of death due to torture. The families of suspects are often tortured to extract information. One account from 2008 reports that after police officers burst into the home of an absent suspect, they attacked his pregnant sister instead with a baseball bat and killed her. Mubarak has a long and comfortable relationship with hosting and torturing detainees for the United States and the United Kingdom, an arrangement often overseen by Mubarak's newly appointed Vice President Omar Suleiman. Jesus Christ. Since the protests, Mubarak has blocked the internet, SMS and Twitter, cut off activist cell phone service, imprisoned journalists, shut down Al Jazeera's Cairo headquarters, seized reporters, six reporters, and their station's equipment. It just goes on and on. And everybody in the Middle East understands the role that the United States plays, not just in the ethnic cleansing in the Palestinian territories, but also our support for regimes like this one. And we Americans, we don't know anything, because so many of us tune into either corporate news in this country or the Murdoch terrorist organization. And so when something like this happens, you know, Americans, what do? We stand there.
Oh my God, what's going on? I don't know. Man, some bitch. Boy, I'll tell you, well, you know, what? I don't know. What? I don't know. What?
W. Bush's daughter, Barbara, one of the twins, has stated categorically her support for same-sex marriage today. She taped a video calling on New York to legalize gay marriage, according to the New York Times. A brief message sponsored by an advocacy group says, quote, "I'm Barbara Bush and I am a New Yorker for marriage equality. New York is about fairness and equality. Everyone should have the right to marry the person that they love." The video ends with Barbara Bush, the daughter, imploring the state's residents to join us. You know, interesting. Meghan McCain, daughter of John McCain, has become an outspoken supporter of same-sex marriage. Mary Cheney, well, obviously Mary Cheney, the daughter of Dick Cheney, has forcefully backed it as well, Mary Cheney being lesbian. But how do the right wing freak bastards handle this? You know, I mean, how do they handle it? I guess they just look at this as the daughters going crazy when they had such wonderful examples of George Bush and Dick Cheney and John McCain, wonderful examples of solid American values, and the girls apparently have just lost their minds because they are now supporting not civil unions, they're supporting gay marriage. Well, there is no such thing as gay marriage. They're supporting marriage between people who want to get married. And Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Democrat from Florida, is really pissed off, and rightly so. House Republicans, this is from Think Progress, House Republicans wasted no time in declaring their legislative priorities for the current Congress. The first, repeal health care for millions of Americans. The second, redefine rape. Oh, my God. A day after repealing health care, Representative Chris Smith, according to Think Progress, a Republican from New Jersey, introduced the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act, a bill that would not only permanently prohibit some federally funded health care programs from covering abortion, but would change the language exempting rape and incest from rape to forcible rape. Here's the son of a bitch that's out of his mind. Somebody needs to explain to him. No. Someone needs to sit down and have him explain the difference between rape and forcible rape. The difference between water and wet water. The difference between fire and hot fire. What a miserable bastard this guy is, right? This is your Republican Party. Republicans want to exclude the following situations from coverage. Women who say no, but do not physically fight off the rapist. Women who are drugged or verbally threatened and raped. And minors impregnated by adults. This is what Republicans want to do with the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. Jesus God. ...172 Republicans, including 16 women and one Democrat, Daniel Lipinski of Illinois, who is the chair of the House Pro-Life Caucus, readily support this new definition, this No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. Now, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz fiercely denounced these conservative animals for this, her words, absolutely outrageous dilution of victims' rights. She said she was enraged at the suggestion that, quote, there is some kind of rape that would be okay. Wasserman Schultz told Raw Story that she considers the bill itself to be, quote, a violent act against women. The act itself. This is what she said. I guess this was with Raw Story. And partly from Think Progress, quote, it is absolutely outrageous, Wasserman Schultz said in an exclusive interview late Monday afternoon. I consider the proposal of this bill a violent act against women. It really is to suggest that there's some kind of rape that would be okay, to force a woman to carry the resulting pregnancy to term and abandon the principle that has been long held, an exception that has been settled for 30 years, is to me a violent act against women in and of itself. Rape is when a woman is forced to have sex against her will, and that is whether she is conscious, unconscious, mentally stable, not mentally stable. She added. She calls this, quote, yet another example of how the extreme right-wing fringe of the Republican Party has complete control over the Republican Party agenda, end quote. Now, this bill that the Republicans are considering makes the Hyde Amendment, the one introduced by that great Catholic Knight of Columbus, Henry Hyde, while he was having sex with another married woman. Until, remember that? Remember that, Kathy? Henry Hyde was boinking the woman for, what, 20 years until the husband finally committed suicide? Oh, that's right. His youthful indiscretion when he was approaching 50. That's the way that filthy bastard, that hateful Henry Hyde, who is now, I don't know, playing a harp somewhere, right? Didn't Hyde go to his great reward? But the bill makes the Hyde Amendment, which currently requires renewal every year, permanent. Supporters are ignoring the rape language change and say it, quote, largely codifies what has already been in practice since 1976. Forcible rape as opposed to rape. Forcible rape as opposed to rape. Yeah, well, okay. Forcible murder as opposed to murder. The Republicans, you see, are determined to put you women back where you belong. You all have gotten, you know, like colored folk, you've gotten way too uppity here in the past 30, 40 years. You really have. You and your liberation crap. You know, it says in the Bible that you should shut up first, second, third. Shut up. So the Republicans, being the party of God, see, certainly it's not just the crazed fundamentalist Muslims who are determined to return everything to the 12th century. It's also the crazed fundamentalist Christians in this country. Equal rights, universal suffrage. Mistakes. We're going to write a law that says, or a bill that says there's a difference between rape and forcible rape. If you just get raped, shut up. Nothing happened. Just be quiet. If you're forcibly raped, well, maybe. But you're going to have to prove it. You're going to have to present witnesses, just like the crazy people in Islam do. Show us four or five witnesses, and we might even think about it.
Of truth, it's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. After the next break, we'll probably take some phone calls. Some interesting letters to the editor, New York Times today, regarding what is happening in Egypt. There was an article on the front page of the Times day before yesterday, Egyptians defiant as military does little to quash protests. That was the article. Peter in Scarsdale, New York wrote, is it any wonder the Middle East is in a state of dangerous chaos? Consider unbridled corruption, tyrannical governments, religious extremism and intolerance, one-dimensional economies, ridiculously disproportionate distributions of wealth, radicalized education systems, unreliable and mistrusted police force, and a terrified middle class. It's a formula for revolution, not evolution, and a reason chaos will reign supreme in that region for generations to come. And Muhammad in Winchester, Virginia, I agree with your January 30 news analysis, yearning for respect, Arabs find a voice. A new, younger internet generation has overcome its fear and is yearning for freedom from tyrannical Arab regimes. These post-colonial authoritarian regimes established total control over all institutions, military, security, political, economic, media, cultural, and religious, all with one purpose, to secure their power and eliminate all opposition. For decades, they've ignored the plight of their impoverished populace, who are courageously holding them accountable. President Hosni Mubarak's departure is inevitable in America, and Israel's relationship with Egypt is in jeopardy after decades of supporting him. These protests reflect a rejection of American and Israeli policies in the region. In 2006, during the Israeli-Lebanon War, Condoleezza Rice, who was then Secretary of State, prophetically proclaimed that the region was undergoing what she called, quote, the birth pangs of a new Middle East, end quote. Oh, wait, I was going to stay away from that. From Ibrahim in London, why do the people of Egypt have to place themselves in danger of being shot and tear gassed by the riot police before the United States realizes that it has, quote, a moral responsibility to stand with those who have the courage to oppose authoritarian rulers, end quote. That was from an editorial in the Times. The United States government has been aware of the nature of President Hosni Mubarak's regime for decades and has sustained it through generous foreign aid. But for whose national security concerns? America's or Israel's? It's time to come down off the fence and stand up for justice. That's what Americans claim they're good at. Now is the time to prove it across the Middle East. No, I don't think we're going to prove anything. And then there's this one from Gustav in New Haven. Professor Emeritus of International Economics at Yale, yada, yada, yada. He writes, it was only a question of time before the, quote, moderate, end quote, Arab states in Israel's neighborhood, also known as stable dictatorships at peace with Israel, would have their comeuppance. But Israel has stubbornly ignored this ticking bomb, as well as a recent generous offer by the Palestinians, and less than energetic prodding by the United States on its settlement policy, and it now faces the possibility that radical elements would take over Egypt and possibly Jordan, Yemen, and others. President Obama did not even mention our intentions about reviving the Israel-Arab peace process during his State of the Union address. If a major Middle East disaster is to be avoided, Obama needs to exert pressure on Israel now before a two-state solution slides off the table. Tom is in Brockton, Massachusetts. Hey, Tom.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Hey, can you put me on a phone where we can hear you?
No, I just had it on speaker. But
oh,
anyway,
okay, there we go.
My apologies.
No problem.
What do you think is going to happen in regards after Mubarak resigns?
I don't have a clue. I think the transition is going to require the only institution in Egypt that has been allowed to establish itself is the army, the military. I would imagine that there's going to be some sort of military run government, and given how those kinds of situations usually develop, I don't know. There may need to be a second one. Hey, listen, let me put you on hold, Tom. We got to do a break here. Bottom of the hour break. We'll come back, and I'll get you a call when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mulvey.
Every morning I get up and I watch the world. Watch the world.
25 before the hour, we're talking with Tom in Brockton, Massachusetts. All right, Tom, where were we? You were asking me what I thought was going to happen?
Yeah, in regards to what kind of government ultimately they're going to end up with.
I would like to think that in Egypt, certainly in Egypt, which is a poor country by economic standards, where half of the population lives on very little, but it's a highly educated country. It's been around for about 7,000 years now, so it's yep. well established in that regard. It is a secular country. I don't think that this is where I disagree with Hedges, the essay of his where radical Islamists are going to take over these countries that start to say enough of this, these dictatorships supported by the United States, United Kingdom, or Israel. I don't think that. I'm hoping, maybe this is just a hope and not a thought, but I don't think that Egypt is going to go that route. I just don't. I think they are more interested in the kind of cosmopolitan approach to life. I mean, this is a country that's been around for seven millennia. I mean, what are they going to do? Are they now going to revert to the 14th century and just say, okay, let's throw away? One of the interesting things that happened, as reported by Al Jazeera, was the when all these people started turning out in the streets and there was reports of vandalism were concerned the Egyptian antiquities. And unlike what happened in Iraq, the Egyptians immediately cordoned off the building and refused to allow anyone near their history. And I think that speaks volumes to me. Americans tend to look at Arab-speaking countries or Muslim countries as all the same, and they're not. And I think that Egypt will wind up with a secular government, or maybe that's a big hope. I don't know.
Well, I do know 30 years ago that during the Iranian Revolution, there was a very progressive movement going on with the Iranian people. And unfortunately, the mullahs ended up taking over after the revolution happened, after the Shah was tossed out. And I just hope that doesn't happen for the Egyptian folks, because Iran, if there's any place really screaming for democracy in the Middle East, it's Iran.
For
they
sure.
Are very, very progressive people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a shame that last year when the protests were happening in Iran, there just didn't seem to be enough of a focus on it from the rest of the world. And I was glad to hear the president's words that, you know, it's time for Mubarak to go and basically allow the Egyptian people to set up their own government. You know, really, honestly, what business is it of ours anyway?
Well, that's true. It's more the business of Israel's and, you know, the relationship between the United States and Israel. But I think I completely agree with you. Iran, this incredibly beautiful country, I've never been there, but I certainly have seen the pictures, on the internet of that country. There is a tremendous Iranian population in Southern California. These are not people who, you know, while they may practice their Islamic faith, these are not people who want to wander around in burqas or beards down to their belly buttons. These are people who want to live a life and live it, I guess, with some aspect of their life going towards their religious beliefs, Islam. But to me, Iranians are to Islam like Methodists are to Christianity. You know, I mean, they're willing to believe in the Methodists are willing to believe in the Christian teaching, but they don't. You know, they're not crazy about it. And I think Iranians regarding Islam is basically the same thing. That's just my 25-cent point of view.
Okay.
All right, Tom.
Well,
thanks, man. I appreciate you
checking in.
You too. Take care. You remember Ed Gaffney? Ed Gaffney is a Richard Pearl protege. He's also one of the PNAC, Project for New American Century, signatories. He's insane. He's a madman. He's absolutely crazy. He wielded a lot of influence, still does, in ultra-conservative, crazy circles of madness and the Bush and Cheney and the whole thing. Scott Keyes, writing at Think Progress, points out conservative neocon Frank Gaffney is taking Muslim Brotherhood fear-mongering to new heights. the Muslim Brotherhood being this tiny little resistance operation in Egypt. This past weekend, Gaffney was a featured speaker at some little circle jerk called the Educational Policy Conference in St. Louis, which has nothing to do with education. It's an annual gathering of social conservatives, right? These are people who want to do away with the history books and teach the Bible. Gaffney used the opportunity to discuss how the Muslim Brotherhood is not only poised to implement a new theocracy in Egypt, but it is also operating in the United States under front groups, he calls them. Doesn't this sound like Joe McCarthy? Front groups like the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is a civil liberties group dedicated to protecting the rights of all Americans regardless of faith, kind of like the what's the Jewish organization? Come on. Help me out. The Jewish organization in this country that is anti-discrimination policies. What is it? Oh, I hate these senior moments. And you're getting them too, Kathy. Anyway, after his speech, Anti-DEFA ADL, thank you. And that's what the Council on American Islamic Relations is. It's the same thing, basically. After his speech, Think Progress caught up with Gaffney to probe his conspiracy further. Echoing the McCarthyist anti-communist rhetoric of the 50s, Gaffney told Think Progress that there were already people in the federal government doing the bidding of stealth jihadists. When we asked Gaffney to name names, he pointed to President Obama's chief counterterrorism advisor, John Brennan, Director of National Intelligence Jim Clapper, and Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano. This son of a bitch is out of his mind. Those are secret agents of the Muslim Brotherhood, and they have infiltrated the highest levels of the U.S. government. Think Progress. Do you think Sharia law has already infiltrated the federal government? Frank Gaffney. There are questionable people who are sympathetic to the program of the stealth jihadists who have influenced with the United States government. Some, I think, are actually working for it. But for sure, people who are persuaded that the folks that they need to work with to reach out to the Muslim American community, for example, who incessantly turn to Muslim Brotherhood organizations for that purpose, they're a very real problem. Think Progress. Can you name a few names, for instance, in the federal government? Gaffney. John Brennan! John Brennan is the Homeland Security Advisor for the President of the United States. Think Progress. He's complicit in this creep into the U.S. of Sharia law. Gaffney. He's absolutely daft on what the nature of the threat and has insisted upon using Brotherhood front organizations as sources of information and as vehicles for reaching out to the Muslim American community. Jim Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, has said that these sorts of groups are sources of wisdom, as he puts it, to the United States government. Janet Napolitano, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, is incessantly meeting with Muslim Brotherhood front organizations and I think has in the past, if not today, employed people who are associated with them. Son of a bitch is insane. In 2003, Gaffney called on the United States military to take out Al Jazeera News Network because it was inciting violence against the Western world. On March 12, 2009, Gaffney appeared on MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews and accused Iraqi President Saddam Hussein of being involved in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and the Oklahoma City bombing. He said, quote, "There's also circumstantial evidence, not proven by any means, but nonetheless some pretty compelling circumstantial evidence of Saddam Hussein's Iraq being involved with the people who perpetrated the 1993 attack on the World Trade Center and even the Oklahoma City bombing." And early this year, Gaffney charged that the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, Sarah Palin's favorite nesting place, CPAC, where the fat man, the drug-addicted deaf guy, the right-wing nutcase, Limbaugh, goes to nest. CPAC, according to Gaffney, had, quote, come under the influence of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is working to bring America under Saudi-style Sharia law. Gaffney told the conservative website WorldNet Daily, the Nazi website WorldNet Daily, that Islamism has infiltrated the American Conservative Union. It just goes on and on. And he said that Grover Norquist, the leading conservative political organizer, is helping the Muslim Brotherhood spread its influence in Washington, D.C. And you don't think this son of a bitch is insane?
I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. One more thing on Gaffney. Most of you who are conscious know about Frank Gaffney. This guy is just totally in crazy. I mean, he's also Israel's best friend in the United States. He would do anything. Well, don't say that. Don't say that, Mike. Yeah. On MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews, Gaffney, commenting on the invasion, our invasion of Iraq back in 2003, said the following, quote, my position is that it is regrettable that any American died. It's regrettable that they had to die, but I believe they did have to die. The threat we did know about was the chemical capability that Saddam Hussein had used against his own people. The potential for biological agents were real. There was evidence that there was an ongoing nuclear program. The danger was inaction, and that could have resulted in the deaths of many more Americans than the 4,000. And that's the reason I'm still delighted that we did what we did. They had to die. Now, if you are an American who joined the military for the career opportunities or the National Guard or the reserves for the extra income, and you were swept up in Bush's God-ordered invasion of Iraq, remember Bush told the Israeli official, was it an Israeli official or somebody from the Israeli media, that God had told him, George Bush, to invade Iraq? Right? So if you were one of those American service members who joined the military not to go fight and kill and have half of your brain blown off, or turn your young wife into a widow, or your young husband into a widower, or your children into a parentless little family. Here is Frank Gaffney saying,
well, I believe they did have to die. Because, you know, he had all these programs. He had nukes, and he had this, and he had that.
This is how sick this son of a bitch is. This is how sick. And Gaffney is not unique in the Republican Party, in the neoconservative madhouse that runs this country, runs its foreign policy. Gaffney's not unique. He's just another scum-sucking rat bastard who wanted, who demanded another Pearl Harbor in this country, who went to Clinton in 1997, pre-Monica Lewinsky, along with these other filthy skunks, and demanded that Clinton invade Iraq. And when Clinton said no, all of a sudden, why, what's this? Monica, he what? He did what? He get him! And now Frank Gaffney is telling the world that the United States government is infiltrated with queers! No, not queers. Abortionists! No. Muslim Brotherhood! There you go. You got to keep them straight, Frank. From Joanne in San Francisco, there will be no more war between Egypt and Israel. There are a few families in Egypt that have not lost a loved one in some war with Israel. They have nothing to gain, and they know it. A democratic Egypt can use its good offices to push Hamas and Fatah into an association so they will speak with one voice. Once they do, there will be no excuse left for Israel to not come to an agreement. If not, Israel will have the excuse that an agreement with one doesn't guarantee agreement with the other. While a country in turmoil causes fear and doubt for those on the sidelines, most of the people in the streets of Egypt are calling for secular democracy. What could possibly be better? Look at what is happening in Jordan. The king fired his government today. Well, yeah, Joanne, but he's done that 8 times in the last 12 years. But that's all right. He fired his government today. While Jordanians seem to like their king, there will be major changes there, too. Jordan was asked to take back the West Bank and refused. They, too, have nothing to gain by going to war with Israel. Nothing will change except, I hope, there may be a settlement with the Palestinian groups so there can be a combined voice for Israel to speak to. Until that happens, there will be no settlement. Joanne and her last name in San Francisco. All right, we have a break coming here. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls. If you're on hold, please hang in there. I wish I had an answer to that question about, you know, I can't even guess what do I think will happen. There's no turning back in Egypt. It's no turning back. I'm very, very concerned about what's going to happen on Friday. The people seem to be operating without leadership. Although, one of the networks tonight explained that one of the people making the contacts to make sure that hundreds of thousands showed up, a young woman in her 30s, 20s. And her group of 11 other people who are initiating the movement of people to demonstrate against Mubarak. But the fear that I have is that on Friday, it's my understanding that the people are going to move to the presidential palace. And if Mubarak is not gone, the threats are that they will remove him. And what will happen at that point, this is where I shudder to think of a Tiananmen Square moment. I hope it doesn't happen. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. program. All right, let me tell you something, Truth Seekers. Valentine's Day is coming up soon. Better plan ahead. Avoid the last-minute rush. Use Pro Flowers. I do. So they're offering my listeners an incredible deal for this week only. You can order the 100 Blooms of Love, which that sounds so Chinese. 100 Blooms of Love, which comes with a free glass vase for only $19.99. For my listeners only, you can also get an exclusive upgrade. Add chocolates, a teddy bear, and a lavender bath kit for just $10 more. Imagine the look on your sweetheart's face when they see this huge bouquet with all the extras. These blooms have guaranteed Valentine's Day delivery and are guaranteed to stay fresh and beautiful for at least 7 days. So here's what you do. Call 800-PRO-FLOWERS and mention Malloy, or go to proflowers.com. Click on the microphone in the top right corner and type in Malloy. This offer expires Friday, so order now. Valentine's Day. We will be gone Friday. I guess you know that. Brad Friedman will sit in for us Friday, and next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, as we join with other progressives and get on a boat. I hope it doesn't sink.
I just hope we don't all get some sort of norovirus.
Don't even talk about it. Before we go back.
Catches fire or loses power.
Yeah, something like that. Hey, don't. Sounds like.
Or pick up a boat full of stranded Republicans.
Why are Americans blocked from watching Al Jazeera English? That's a good question. I think this is from Think Progress, too. You know, if you live in Canada and you're looking for in-depth coverage of the situation in Egypt, Canadians have the option of tuning into Al Jazeera English. And we here in this country, we can go online. American viewers have little choice but to wait until one of the U.S. cable company approved networks broadcast footage from Al Jazeera. Why? You know the answer to this. You know, we live in a different kind of captivity here. The destruction of having your brain scrubbed. We have the greatest entertainment in the world. You can turn on, what do we have, 600 channels of nothing but garbage? Okay, there's a few good channels in there, like classic Turner Network. Is it Turner Network? No. What is it? What's the classic Turner, where they show all the film noir? Is that Turner Network? Turner Classic Movies? TCM. There's some good channels, of course.
We have a friend who does all the voice work for TCM. You're now watching.
But for the most part, the 600 channels are garbage. What do we have to do to get Al Jazeera? Never have. You know who's blocking Al Jazeera? ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, and the Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Broadcast Organization. There's irony in the fact that Egypt's blackout of the internet causes so much finger pointing and tongue wagging and scorn here in the United States. But at the same time, cable companies refuse to offer Americans Al Jazeera because of, quote, political and commercial reasons, end quote, that amount to basically a bunch of xenophobic hooey. So says Think Progress. So you go to their website. You go to their website. Jesus, God. Oh, and lost in the coverage from North Africa and other parts of the Middle East is this. About 500 people demonstrated yesterday in a central Moscow square to demand the ouster of Prime Minister Vladimir Putin and his, quote, rule of thieves, end quote. The rally took place peacefully, according to the Associated Press, but police detained a group of 20 opposition activists. About 80 protesters also were detained in St. Petersburg, but of a number of other cities where demonstrations were held. plural, cities, demonstrations. Prominent opposition leader Boris Nemtsov, who was arrested and jailed for 15 days following a similar demonstration a month ago, kept up his assault on Russia's longtime leader, Putin. He compared Putin to Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, who is facing mass unrest after 30 years in power. Mass unrest. 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 As opposed to rest. Rest and unrest. Is that what Mubarak is facing, AP? Unrest. Interesting word. I think I'll go have an unrest. Arrest. Unrest. Rest. Weird. Nemtsov shouted to the crowd from the back of a truck, "Please someone tell me how our leadership differs from Mubarak's. Russia has to get rid of Putin." Nemtsov has accused Putin of allowing corruption to pervade the corridors of power and building up considerable personal wealth during his 11 years in power at the expense of ordinary Russians. Yeah. Nemtsov's arrest drew Western condemnation and mobilized his supporters, who held daily pickets outside the jail where he was being held. Hundreds of police surrounded the square Monday where the demonstrators were, but they allowed the demonstrators to disperse after the hour-long rally ended with cries of, "Down with the rule of thieves!" Police did, however, detain another opposition leader, Eduard Limonov, and his supporters as they walked away from the square. In the U.S., the White House said, another goddamn building talking. I get so irritated. The White House said, the lamppost said, the bushes said, the cobblestone said, the brick said, the dining room table said. It was troubled by the detention and reports that demonstrators were being mistreated, including beaten by the police. No. The dining room table and the couch are upset about that. And the trees on the White House lawn and the White House, they're very upset. In St. Petersburg, the opposition to Putin did not have permission to protest. Police spokesman Vyacheslav Stepchenko said officers detained 60 people when they broke up the rally. "We will detain you. You do not have the proper permit." So, while we are focused on North Africa, look what is happening in Russia, in Mother Russia. Look what is happening. Putin. Okay, enough from me. Drew is in Madison, listening on the mic. Hello, Drew.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
I'm calling to mention a couple things about Egypt. I wanted to make a point that right now, in general, the Western capitalist press is fairly uncritical of the revolution. They're pretty decent in covering it, but the second Hugo Chavez type were to come to power, or God forbid a Castro or Guevara type were to come to power, and they started nationalizing a bunch of industries, you would see the Western capitalist press change their tune quick.
Mm-hmm. How do you explain what you just said? Because you're absolutely right. So far, the gangster capitalists have been very quiet about this.
Well, I can explain that easily, because I think the Western capitalist press right now.
Hey, do me a favor. Drew, hold on just one second. Let me come back to you because we have to do commercial stuff here. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is the Molloy Show.
This is your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Look at the state of the world. Let's go back to Drew in Madison, Wisconsin. All right, where were we?
You were talking about why, or you were asking me why you felt that the Western Capitals press was being somewhat...
Why very anti-Chavez, but silent so far on Egypt?
Right. And I think I have the answer to that.
Okay.
Right now, I think the Western powers, Western capitalist press, is looking at this as a potentially being a velvet revolution of yuppies. And that is not going to be the case, because this revolution, or this fledgling revolt, right, this revolt that's going on right now in Egypt, is by and large fueled by the youngsters.
Mm-hmm.
When I mean youngsters, I mean Gen X and Gen Y. This is one of the first examples of Generation X and Generation Y millennials revolting because of incredible levels of unemployment. And it's just such a very positive thing to see. It's just wonderful. And it's an example from a, here's a third world country showing the, you know, what needs to happen in the United States, a third world country giving us a pristine example of exactly what needs to happen in the United States. That's real democracy at work.
Right, and of course they're not the first to demonstrate what people should do when they feel like their elections have been stolen or a president has been appointed when the indications were that his opponent won. You know, the United States signed its own small D Democratic death notice on December 13th, 2000, when we did not turn out as a result of the ruling the day before by the Supreme Court. Stop the vote counting. Stop the vote counting, because if you continue, it's going to injure, in a legal sense, George W. Bush. And at that point, the American people rolled over, went back to sleep, turned on the television, and that's when the gangster capitalists knew that they had this country right where they wanted it.
Yeah, I read something Howard Zinn mentioned, made a great point, of course, about a year or two before he died in an essay he wrote. And he simply said that, unfortunately, right now, the middle classes in America and the working classes in America are not, you know, are essentially not suffering enough yet. Where they're going to, he thinks if they were to, if we were to suffer more, I mean, I'm a working class guy, that more of us would be in the streets rallying. And I think he might be onto something. They were probably not to the point where, you know, like the Egyptians, the Generation X and Generation Y folks in Egypt, where they were just saddled with incredible rates of unemployment, they were cut out of any future, and this is the hope. Revolution is the hope for the hopeless.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of truth to that, Drew. And listen, thanks, man. I'm going to move on here. Thanks for your comments. There's probably a lot of truth to that. Suffering, I guess, is totally subjective. Economic suffering or political denial of political power is subjective, depending on the country, the culture, the time. But I think that you're probably right, Drew, and Zinn was right, that the time will come, and it has happened in our past before, where the people said, no, we're not going to put up with this. Usually it was about labor issues or social democracy issues, social safety net issues. So I don't know what it's going to take. I've been wondering about that for years, what it's going to take to make Americans wake up before we have a 30-year long, well, that'll never happen. And the other thing that, you know, it's impossible to make predictions. Anyone makes predictions about what is going to happen in this revolution in Egypt is a fool for making the prediction. I don't care how well-versed they are in Egyptian politics or politics in the so-called Mideast, politics in North Africa. It does, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I have a sense that very quickly, very soon, these massive rallies are going to turn decidedly anti-American. And I think that's going to happen because these people have been in the streets for a week now. And whatever support they've gotten has been tepid. It's been slow in coming. The President of the United States, who went to Cairo and made his great speech, probably equivalent to the Cross of Gold speech. I mean, it was a powerful, moving speech. It shook the Islamic world. And where did that man go? Where did that man with the funny name go? Barack Hussein Obama. Where did he go? So, you know, you could say that Obama's speech was just what was needed a year and a half ago to give opposition people, not parties, not movements, but to give opposition or people who are really seeking freedom and justice and liberation, the impetus to move forward. Where is that man now? Obama's statements have been lousy, frankly. Why is he not in support of the very revolution that he talked about when he gave the speech from Cairo? And I think the people in Egypt who have been struggling now for a week, if this rat bastard Mubarak is not gone by Friday, it's very simple to draw a very short line between Mubarak and the United States. And so far they've refrained from doing that, but I think we're right on the cusp of something here.
Tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. If you want to get a call in tonight, the number is 877-996-2556. From Chris in Nanaimo, British Columbia, he writes, Mike, I drive a taxi, and the last couple of days I've been ferrying around a large number of people from Egypt, not just the regular international students, but older, well-heeled sorts. They're currently ensconced in our local hotels, the ones advertised internationally. Not the ones for backpackers or temporary workers on local contracts. Strangest thing, when I try to talk to them, they usually don't talk back. They have very good English skills, and when lightly queried on their knowledge of the current affairs in Egypt, they are uniformly hostile in their appraisal of those same events and the entire situation. It's good to see my hometown has an international reputation, but I do wish it wasn't as a destination or transshipment for fascist rats fleeing their ship of state. Besides, the bastards don't tip. I figure they've got to keep those ill-gotten gains for the inevitable extradition hearings. Chris in Nanaimo, British Columbia. Yeah, I just think it would be... How to say this, because I understand and have as much knowledge as it's possible to get for someone who's inquisitive in this country about our relationship with Egypt over the past 30 years. It has been a very bad relationship in the sense of human rights and torture and denial of political rights and political freedom. Our relationship with Mubarak has been so similar to our relationship with other dictators. And knowing that, you know, I think about the people in Egypt who live under this kind of agreement between the United States and their dictator, and how much deeper their knowledge is of the day-to-day reality of that. So what I'm afraid of, because it just, I think there's a lot of people in this country who are in solidarity with the people of Egypt. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've just been reading too many letters to the editor or too many emails to this program, which will be slanted towards the idea of human rights. But we do know, and the Egyptians know, that their country was used as a dumping ground for our need for torture, to torture people. The denial of political rights to the people of Egypt all these years. What I'm getting at, very slowly here, is the idea that eventually, and probably justifiably so, these massive crowds of people are going to start condemning the United States once again. Once again. Now, is that condemnation justified? Yeah. On a government-to-government level. Is it justified on a people-to-people level? You know, I sometimes wonder how Americans feel that they can travel in places like Central America or certain countries in South America or Southeast Asia or South Asia or the Middle East without being seen as co-conspirators in some of the most violent, vicious crimes perpetrated against other people around the planet in the 20th century. I go back to that book, The Ugly American, that was written when? In the 50s, 60s? I forget the authors. There were two of them. I remember that. And I remember when I read that, I just, and that was so long ago. And when I read that, it was a shocker. I had no idea. Most Americans don't. Can you imagine, for example, Cuba? Had we supported the revolution instead of supporting the dictator, Batista, if we had supported the revolution and the goals of the revolution, what a phenomenal society Cuba would have been. It is anyway. It is a... they turn out, I think, per capita more physicians than, what, any other country on earth? I'm just pulling imaginary facts out of the air. But isn't that the truth? They're very well-educated, but look at what has happened. Because we isolated them, because we said no, there's been a dictator there for 50 years. 50 years? Oh, my God. When was it? When did Castro, 59? Yeah, it's been 50 years, hasn't it? Political freedom was suppressed in Cuba. Religious freedom was... that has eased, I believe. I have friends who have traveled to Cuba back in the 70s, the Venceremos Brigades, Americans who would go to Cuba to work in the cane fields or fishing industry or what have you. But the fact remains, no matter how people wanted to justify Castro, he was a dictator. It was one-man rule. But so many times we've backed the wrong... Graham Greene wrote The Ugly America. Oh, I'm thinking... I'm not... That's the wrong book. That was... Ugly America... Graham Greene wrote about Haiti. Not The Ugly American. What? Damn it. It's the second time tonight. Anybody have an idea what I'm talking about? But anyway, my fear about Friday when people go to their religious services, Christians as well as the Muslims, and are inspired by the call to overthrow Mubarak, at that point, with the tepid, almost non-existent support from the United States, and I'm not sure about support from the conservative government of the UK. I doubt if there's very much support there. I don't know what the attitude of the French government is either. But the United States, and I mentioned those three because, of course, we were the three of the imperialist powers that so destroyed political and economic freedom in those countries over decades. But to see it take a decided anti-American twist, it would be justified, I guess, certainly. Not guess. I mean, it would be justified. Mubarak would have been thrown out decades ago if it were not for the backing he has gotten from the succession of American presidents and their advisors and leaders. I hope that doesn't happen. And I'll tell you something else, too. People who hate... Nobody could be more disgusted with the Likudniks than me or than I. But if it becomes anti-Israel, if the screaming changes from a cry for freedom to a cry for revenge, not that revenge isn't justified, I guess. I don't know anymore, if I ever did. But to see this revolution go into an anti-Israel or anti-United States phase, while justified, I think would drain the energy away from what the people are trying to do. If they can focus on removing the dictator or convincing the dictator to leave, I just think it would be more productive for the people of Egypt, and I hope that doesn't sound horribly jingoistic or arrogant on my part. It's not intended to be, but I think it would be more productive for the people of Egypt if they focused now, anyway, on their reality. I may be completely wrong. Jesus. In San Diego. Hello, Leanne.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Hey, I felt compelled to call you. I have a nephew who's 24 who left last year to go to Cairo. He's there right now in Tahrir Square. I've been calling him daily because I'm so worried about him. And let me just tell you what he's saying about how they're treating Americans there.
Okay.
Before he left, he was a little right-winger, supported Bush, the whole thing. The reason why he went there was to study Arabic so that he could join the CIA. He has hopes of joining the CIA or the FBI. to hear this kid speak now, you cannot believe it. He doesn't want to leave. He's fallen in love with the Arabic people. He loves them. He said they are so pro-American to the fact that he lives in an apartment right in the Tahrir Square with his roommates. He said they're protecting him and all the Americans in that building because those people, the Egyptian people, know that if there are any incidents against the Americans there, that it'll be turned around in the media to make it sound like the Egyptian people are making this out to be against Americans, and that's clearly not what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the economic situation and them trying to throw out this dictator. And he said, as far as them becoming an Islamic State, it's a bunch of baloney. They've tried to demonize the Brotherhood, the Islamic Brotherhood there. He said, the people there are so pro-Western, you can't even believe it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, look at the signs they've been putting up. I saw one on TV that said, yes, we can too, meaning Obama. I mean, all the signs they're putting up are in English. He said they're very educated, more so than him. A lot of them have their master's degree. They're very intelligent, and they have a passion for wanting their country to be a democracy like
mm-hmm.
we have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would argue that last little bit there about our being a democracy.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that certainly was on the books at one time. What has influenced your son in terms of, I'm assuming what you're saying is in part his political point of view has changed. Is that true?
Well, because when he went there, he bought the whole thing about the weapons of mass destruction and that Arabs were bad and that they, you know, he bought into that whole right-winger argument, and now he has befriended those people. He sees that they're human beings just like us, that they want the same things that we do, and he sees a lot of the fallacy and a lot of the lies. I even told him, I said, you want to know what they're saying about what your friend O'Reilly's saying about Al Jazeera? Because he says, Al Jazeera is the greatest media. They're reporting everything. I said, you want to know what your friend O'Reilly's saying on TV? That Al Jazeera is the one that's starting and flaming all the problems there in the Middle East.
Oh, my God.
That's what's going on with that. So he's completely done a whole turnaround because he's now living there amongst the people, and he sees that they're human beings, wonderful people, just like we are in the United States.
That's that is such a story that is shared by so many people who have been led to believe untruths about other groups of people, and then when they get out there and find out when they leave this country and find out the extent of the propaganda that's been pushed down our throats, when they actually go like your son has and find out what the truth is, it's not what is fed to the American public through our media.
Exactly.
Something else is being fed to the American public.
And he said the people there are so much more worldly as far as political affairs and worldly affairs.
Sure.
He said they know about everything. And he said it puts our country to shame that we in the United States are so isolated, and the biggest thing that we want to watch is Dancing with the Stars. He said he's in awe. He is in awe of the people.
And that is true in so many different parts of the world, countries in Africa, South America, where they know more about not just our political troubles, but the interplay, interaction of various countries around the planet. Whereas we Americans just sometimes I feel that we're just hopelessly ignorant. I hope it changes. What is your son's plan now?
He's my nephew.
Well,
I'm getting ready to call him right after we get off the phone because I agree with you. Friday's going to be a pivotal point, and I'm telling him he needs to get on a plane. I have him registered with the State Department. Friday's going to be D-Day. I think they've both drawn their lines in the sand, and he said Mubarak said he's not going till November or September, and these people said they want him out by Friday. They've given him a deadline. And I think that at that point there's going to be violence. I think that they've been patient, or he's been patient as far as the military and not having them draw fire, but I think on Friday there's going to be, and I think also they said on television, on CNN, that Mubarak has these groups of people that he's putting out there to kind of stir up trouble, pro-Mubarak groups to turn against the demonstrators that are for getting Mubarak out. and I think they're also going to start problems. So I think Friday is going to be a pivotal moment, and I think that there's going to be violence.
We have about 15 seconds left. Let me ask you, he's your nephew. What do his parents say about this?
His mom is not alive. She died of breast cancer, and his father is in the hospital right now.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm it. I'm his aunt, and I am going to put, if I have to grab him by his neck and get him back here, I am. But it's like he fell in love with it, the place, and he doesn't want to come back now.
Yeah, that can happen.
So,
that can happen.
Yep.
Leanne, thanks for sharing that with us. That's an incredible story. I hope you'll stay in touch. I would love to hear more when...
If he stays there, I'll call in again and tell you what the situation is.
Sounds good. Thanks, Leanne.
All right, thank you.
Right,
bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
That's it for from us for tonight. I'm sorry if I didn't get to your call here. We'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.